think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
It is. Throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 6th anniversary show of Low Limit Football on this 1st of September 2019. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we have a jam-packed show for you. Some of the great interviews that we've done over the past couple of days here. Some big, big names, very exciting information to talk about, and I know that my co-host and I had an absolute blast interviewing everybody. A condensed show from what you're used to for our anniversary show. Normally we'll give you 10-11 guests. This time we've kind of condensed it down into an hour format, 4 guests, but certainly where we skimped on quantity, we did not skip on quality. Let me get my co-host in here, Mr. Roberto Rojas. 6 years, my man. Happy anniversary.
Man, we're getting old.
You're not kidding.
Happy anniversary, and it's been a pleasure to do this, both of us, to do that we love for the last 6 years. It's been really incredible to see us grow in great terms. I think we've been able to develop a reputation that has made us respectable on all fronts. I do want to say something here, and I'll admit it. I mean, there are people that, you know, we have gained multiple friendships. Some people as well have unfortunately gone the other way, maybe not as forgotten, but perhaps not as remembered. You know, people
accessible.
Tend to shy away.
Yeah,
but we always have to remember what we do well. I mean, people, like all bonds, you need to always keep it strong and to continue to do it the way you are, and generally just be a nice person, have the love for football, soccer, whatever you like to call it, and go with it, because, you know, there are unfortunately a lot of mean people out there in the world that want to use its negativity to bring you down. But as much as this sport has become much more of a negative aspect on all fronts, you know, there are still great things to talk about in the end.
No doubt. I want to drive home your comment about, you know, old friends and people that have helped us on the way, and new relationships and contacts that we've been able to make based on what we do with this show. And I think tonight's guest list really, Rob, embodies what you said. We've got a very old connection. We've got new connections. We've got someone who I would consider a friend, as a guest as well. I mean, there are quite a few of those, and I think what you said, you know, is certainly going to come to life in the guests that we have in store for tonight. So before we do that, one thing that we are not going to shy away from in terms of this show is opening thoughts. Our opening thoughts tonight are going to be based around the Champions League draw that we saw come up on Thursday. I'm going to run through the groups quickly
And then we'll just give our 2 seconds on each, you know, on our thoughts on it. Group A, Paris Saint-Germain, Real Madrid, Club Brugge, and Galatasaray. Galatasaray, by the way, today adding Radamel Falcao to the list, which is an interesting move and I think will bode well for them. Group B, Bayern Munich, Tottenham Hotspur, Olympiakos, and Red Star Belgrade. Group C, Manchester City, Shakhtar Donetsk, Dinamo Zagreb, Atalanta. Group D, Juventus, Atletico Madrid, Bayer Leverkusen, and Lokomotiv Moscow. Group E, Liverpool, Napoli, rematch from last season, Red Bull Salzburg, and Genk. Group F, Barcelona, Dortmund, Inter Milan, and Slava Prague. Group G, Zenit St. Petersburg, Benfica, Lyon, and RB Leipzig. And the last group, Group H, Chelsea, Ajax, Valencia, and Lille. I think, Rob, you and I, and I think the world really agrees that the group of death is Group F, Barcelona, Borussia Dortmund, Inter Milan, and then Slava Prague. I think the group of life, which is one of the other ones that we like to, kind of the most even group for me, is Group G with Zenit, Benfica, Lyon, and Leipzig. I don't think the positions are going to be decided in that group until the very last day. There's some tough road matches to go to there. There's some strong teams, but I think everyone is pretty level there, and I think that one's going to be the most exciting group to watch. And then, like you said, we have the rematch between Liverpool and Napoli, a rematch last year that saw Liverpool sneak in ahead of Napoli based on goal differential, if you remember correctly. PSG, if I remember right, won the group last season, and then Liverpool got in where they all had equal points. So that is going to be interesting to see the rematch there. You would expect both of them to advance. But overall, I think a pretty even draw, don't you think, Rob?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you look at a few of these groups here, I think the ones that stand out for me is obviously Group F with the group of death. There's three former champions in Barcelona, Borussia Dortmund, and Inter Milan, three powerhouses in their respective leagues as well. I think when you look at other groups such as Juventus, Atletico Madrid, Bayer Leverkusen, Lokomotiv Moscow, you know, that kind of group, it does bode well in terms of unpredictability. I think when you look at the most even group, you kind of have to favor Zenit, Benfica, Lyon, and Leipzig in Group G. That's the one that will definitely be as close as it may be. And then, you know, you look at the other groups that might be more straightforward but could pose as a surprise, you know, PSG and Real Madrid, Bayern Munich and Spurs, Liverpool, Napoli. Chelsea's group does seem a little bit interesting as well. That does seem tasty, but I think when you look at the more lopsided one, I think it's City, because I personally think that, you know, with City, that they have a big advantage to win this group and win this group well, whereas the other three are going to fight for that second spot.
Yeah, and I think that's there's a group of life kind of feel to that group, because everyone would assume Manchester City is going to win the group. They're going to win it running away. But those last three teams, Zagreb, Donetsk, and Atalanta, are going to be really, really even. And I think they're going to pose some great, great matchups to watch in this tournament. I think going to Zagreb and having to play Dinamo, Atalanta is going to be tough. They're going to be playing their matches in the San Siro, which I think is kind of a weird decision in my opinion. I think I would rather have them play those at home, but they probably want the ticket money is what I can imagine. So, you know, there's a lot of intrigue in that group when you take the City component out of it, right, Rob? I think that's very even. I think that last position is going to go down to the last day as well, and I haven't really dug completely into it, but Atalanta and Shakhtar Donetsk look like they play December 11th, where City plays Zagreb. So you might have Zagreb at home, and Atalanta are going to be on the road to Shakhtar Donetsk. So that's going to be one heck of a matchup. You know, that last day watching those matches to see who gets in, I think is going to be quite intriguing. Obviously, as we move on in the tournament, we will definitely give more and more insight to the matches, the groups, the teams as they play. Because obviously, Rob, we're actually in a spot here where the transfer window is not closed, right? These teams could actually change structure within the next few days. There's talk of Jerome Boateng possibly going to Juventus after the Giorgio Chiellini injury. Like I'd mentioned, Radamel Falcao looks like it's finally a done deal at Galatasaray. So that is another one that is, you know, intriguing as well. They're going to pick up a big striker in Radamel Falcao. There's still moves being made here. So a lot of these teams are not set yet, and I think it's going to be interesting. We'll have to see if Real Madrid decide to do something else here before the end of the season. Paris Saint-Germain, there was the big intrigue with Neymar, which apparently is now a done deal or a dead deal. and Neymar will not be leaving. PSG actually said that up until the international break, Neymar would not play, and they wouldn't play him until they decided what was going to be his future. So now we have that settled. Now Neymar is going to be in, you know, all in for PSG at this point. So we'll have to see how that develops with the team, especially with Mbappe and Cavani being injured. So there's a lot of moving pieces here. So it's almost a little premature to kind of look at the teams in general. Do you know what I mean? I think we'd be better off waiting, maybe even to the next show where we have a little more stability. But that doesn't kick off until October 1st. Till September 18th. So it's right around the corner, and we'll be watching soon enough. So let's jump into our interviews, Rob. Again, this is an anniversary show. Normally, we like to bring the biggest and best guests, and to start off, I think we're going to give you the biggest and best guest that we could have had. He is a 3-time World Goalkeeper of the Year. He was named in 1998 to be the top goalkeeper, co-top goalkeeper of the World Cup with Fabian Barthez, who was the winner of that World Cup. In that World Cup, he only conceded 2 goals. One of them was an extra time to Laurent Blanc, or else Paraguay was within inches of eliminating what would have been the eventual champion in France on their home soil. He's been controversial in the past. I know that he's kind of gotten into a few different spats over the years, whether it be politically or professionally. But he's always been kind of a lightning rod for that type of thing. He's also the second highest goal scoring goalkeeper in the history of the world. He is the only goalkeeper to have scored a hat trick in a game, which is shocking, but amazing. You know what I mean? He's also scored more goals as a goalkeeper for his country than any other goalkeeper in the world. And it was an absolute pleasure to interview him. And Rob, I'm going to get your reactions to him and your plaudits afterwards, because I really want to get into it and play this for everyone. So joining us now on Low Limit Football is Jose Luis Chilavert. Joining us now on Low Limit Football, one of the all-time greats in world football, Mr. Jose Luis Chilavert. Welcome to the show. I want to start out with my questions, and I'll ask them in English and then in Spanish. I want to look back on the 1998 World Cup, possibly one of the greatest years of your career. You were captain of the 1998 World Cup team. You'd only conceded 2 goals in the tournament, one to Nigeria in group play and one to Laurent Blanc in the 114th minute to be eliminated by the eventual champion. You were named IFFHS Goalkeeper of the Year ahead of World Cup winner Fabian Barthez. What's your most memorable moment of 1998?
Quiero mirar hacia atrás en 1998, posiblemente uno de los mejores años de tu carrera. Capitano del equipo de la Copa del Mundo de 1998, solo concedió 2 goles en el torneo, uno a Nigeria y uno al grupo y uno a la Laurent Blanc en el minuto 114 para ser eliminado por el eventual campeón. Usted fue nombrado portero del año antes de ganador en la Copa Mundial a Fabián Barthez. ¿Cuál es tu momento más memorable de 1998?
Hola, Roberto y Joe, es un placer estar con ustedes. El partido contra Francia fue muy duro. Lo importante es que cuando llegamos al Mundial de Francia, los franceses, donde estuvimos concentrados, que se llama un pueblito, se llama Clapier, cerca de la ciudad de Montpellier, preguntaban de dónde éramos. No sabían dónde estaba ubicado Paraguay. Después de ese partido tan duro, que los franceses no querían ver los penales, muchos aficionados franceses se retiraban del estadio. Ellos saben perfectamente que Paraguay es un equipo guerrero, duro. Le complicamos muchísimo a Francia. Ese fue para mí el partido más importante en mi carrera.
He's saying that the game against France was very hard, and that the important thing is that before France 1998, a lot of people in France didn't know where Paraguay was from. They didn't know exactly what it was. But after that game, you know, people started to find out about them, and you know, the French didn't want they didn't want penalties in the end, because what could have happened, and they could have gotten eliminated. But in the end, It was very hard, but it was a very important thing for me as well. José Luis, yo voy a introducir ahora primero y ir por mi pregunta. Solamente quería preguntar hoy en día sobre... luchaste contra la adversidad y la pobreza en tu Paraguay natal para ser uno de los mejores arqueros, no solamente 3 veces, pero también de todos los tiempos. Si tenés un tipo de consejo para tener a los arqueros que podrían estar escuchando hoy en día y quieren estar en tus zapatos... y cumplir el sueño de ser jugador profesional, ¿qué será? José Luis, you fought against adversity and poverty in your native Paraguay to end up becoming one of the best goalkeepers, not only just three times, but also of all time. What kind of advice do you have for the goalkeepers that might be listening today that want to end up in your shoes or those that want to accomplish their dream and play professionally?
Sí, yo nací en una cuna muy humilde en Paraguay, en mi ciudad de Luque, y no teníamos, mi padre, no teníamos dinero para comprar una pelota de fútbol, y jugábamos descalzo con un pomelo verde en la calle, con mis amigos, con mis hermanos, y así triunfé, siempre soñé jugar al fútbol, y fui creciendo, y sin lugar a dudas, el mensaje es que hay que amar a la profesión que uno practica, y también es fundamental estudiar, ir a la escuela, ir al colegio, y también estudiar es muy bueno para ser un buen ciudadano, y después elegir cualquier deporte, no solamente el fútbol. Justamente ayer, en mi país, yo doy charla de liderazgo y motivación, y había muchísimos jóvenes. Para ser buenos deportistas, hay que cuidar dos cosas, el trabajo y el cuidado en la vida privada, y no caer con los vicios que nos contaminan. Nada de tabaco, nada de alcohol, menos droga. Y mi padre siempre nos inculcó jugar al fútbol, y mi sueño se ha hecho realidad en corto tiempo. Debuté en primera división con 15 años en mi equipo, en el Sportivo Luqueño, donde hoy en día soy el embajador del Sportivo Luqueño en el mundo.
He's saying that, you know, he was born in a humble roots in Luque, that, you know, his parents didn't have enough money to buy a ball and were using a bunch of other stuff to make a ball. A makeshift ball, but in the end, the advice is to, you know, you have to love your profession, and also if you need to study and to be a good person and not go into the vices that could destroy you as a person, be it go into drugs, go into alcohol, and that kind of stuff. The fact that I was a professional, and I started my professional career at Sportivo Luqueño at just 15, where now I am the proud ambassador for the club all around the world. It's something that has made me very proud of to go and represent Paraguay as a whole. Otra cosa también, José Luis, yo quería preguntar sobre los arqueros actual que vemos en el mundo, en el fútbol mundial. Hemos visto un debate sobre lo mejor arquero del mundo, como Alisson en Liverpool, Ederson en Manchester City, Marc-André Ter Stegen en Barcelona, Oblak en Atlético, entre muchos otros. ¿Quién crees que es el mejor arquero del mundo hoy en día y por qué? I just wanted to ask you more about the current goalkeepers we see in the world game. We have seen a debate on the best goalkeepers in the world, like Alisson, Ederson, Ter Stegen, John Oblak, among many others. Who do you believe is the best goalkeeper in the world and why?
Bueno, hoy en día el mejor portero del mundo para mí es Ter Stegen, el portero del Barcelona. Después está Alisson, también del Liverpool. Y el tercero es Oblak. Esa es mi lista de los mejores porteros del mundo. Lo importante es que para ser un buen portero hay que saber jugar con los pies. Yo creo que he dejado un legado de que hoy en día los porteros, los mejores, saben jugar, se manejan bien con los pies, y es una manera también de una enseñanza que he dejado para el mundo del fútbol. Hoy en día lo que es difícil ver que salgan porteros que salgan a patear tiros libres o penalti. Eso ya es imposible, como lo lograba yo. Llegué a marcar 70 goles en mi carrera y ser reconocido 3 veces el mejor del mundo por la Federación de Historia y Estadística del Fútbol Mundial no ocurre todos los días, y es un orgullo para mi país haber sido elegido 3 veces el mejor del mundo.
For him, the best goalkeeper in the world is Marc-André Ter Stegen, then Alisson, then Oblak in that list. I think in today's game, you know, to be a good goalkeeper, you need to learn how to play with your feet, and it's very hard to do so. As I kind of left an impression back in the day, I was a goalkeeper that scored almost 70 goals in my career from free kicks and penalties, and to be recognized 3 times the best goalkeeper in the world is something that doesn't happen every day, and I'm very proud of every accomplishment that I accomplished in my career.
And it's a great question because it leads into my last question for José Luis, and it regards to keepers back then to keepers now. Goalkeepers have undergone a transformation over the past 20 years, becoming more field player than goalkeeper. Would you consider today's modern goalkeeper better than the goalkeepers you played with when you started in 1982? José Luis, los arqueros han sufrido una transformación en los últimos 20 años.
convertidos en más jugadores en campo que arqueros. ¿Consideras que el arquero moderno de hoy es mejor que los porteros con los jugaste con comenzaste en 1982?
Bueno, realmente el fútbol, las transformaciones ahora han metido el VAR. El VAR, la tecnología bien usado puede servir, pero en Sudamérica la Conmebol es un antro de corrupción. El caso FIFA Gay continúa y hoy está muy mal utilizado el VAR en Sudamérica. Pero me gustaría que, si se puede transformar, que los tiros libres fuera de área sea sin barrera. Ahí se va a ver la técnica del ejecutante y también cómo reacciona el portero. Ahí hay que mostrar la categoría. Yo creo que ese es el punto donde la FIFA debe poner para buscar más goles.
He believes that the change of soccer and especially with VAR could serve well, but unfortunately CONMEBOL has served as a form of corruption in the way in FIFA Gate, and I think that's been used badly. But what I would like to see and how FIFA implements it would be for free kicks to be used without a wall, and how goalkeepers can indeed react to it, and I think that'd be a great point to get more opportunities onto goal.
That's interesting. Thank you for joining us on the show. It was an absolute honor to speak with you today. Gracias por acompañarnos en la programa. Fue un honor hablar con ustedes hoy.
Un gran abrazo, éxitos, ahí Roberto y yo. Un gran abrazo a todos los amigos ahí en Estados Unidos. Muchas gracias.
Gracias.
Thank you very much.
José Luis Chilavert. Rob, your reaction, you know, when I think about Chilavert, I think about one of the greatest goalkeepers of all time, and I think he belongs on the list. And we can go through the accolades, but I want your reaction to the interview and if you want to throw some of the accolades at us.
Yeah, just something on a personal level. As a Paraguayan, I think we can probably consider Chilavert probably the greatest Paraguayan player of all time. I think he kind of, as he kind of said in his first answer, he kind of represented Paraguay. And after the World Cup in 1998, where not a lot of people knew about Paraguay, especially the French, now after that, everyone started to know of him because of Chilavert. So on a personal level, it was quite cool to speak to him. But yeah, just on the accolades as well. I mean, Libertadores champion, winner in Argentina, 3-time player of the year, as you said, best goalkeeper of the world. Beat the great Milan side of the 90s, you know, with Maldini, Baresi, with Capello as the coach. You know, he's played in France and Spain. In Uruguay, he became South American Player of the Year in '96, best goalkeeper in all of South America. So yeah, he's done it all. He's done it all. And what's even interesting as well, you know, is sharing some photos to you of some of the players that he's played against. You know, he's played against players like Kahn and Maradona, Ronaldo. I was actually looking at a few interviews of him on YouTube in terms of preparations. Actually, someone asked him, you know, growing up and playing in this era of the 90s that had so many great players, someone asked him who was the greatest player that he played against, and he picked Romario.
Really?
The great Romario.
Yeah. It's a good one to pick, too. I mean, let's be honest. He is certainly one of the greater players we've ever seen in our time. So, you know, he's certainly faced the best of the best. When you talk about players like Maradona, when you talk about Romario, El Fenomeno, I mean, there's massive, massive talent.
And in a way, also, just one last thing, just because of what he was able to do, you know, play with his feet, you know, to get out of the goal, he kind of revolutionized and became a pioneer of the modern goalkeeper, many goalkeepers are going now and playing with their feet and being more of an outfield player.
That was the goal of my last question to him, too, because that was my focus, is that he's really the first goalkeeper that was the one that started playing with your feet. Right. I mean, that's where the transition, I think, started for me always was Chilavert, you know, and moving forward, I think many of today's goalkeepers mimic what Chilavert was trying to do back in his career. So, it's homage to him. One last thing I want to bring up about Chilavert before we move on to our next guest. I went back to look at the 1998 World Best Goalkeeper voting. He beat out, by the way, this is the top 10 going from 10 to 1 in voting. Oliver Kahn, Angelo Peruzzi, Drazen Ladic, Claudio Taffarel, David Seaman, Gianluca Pagliuca, Peter Schmeichel, Edwin van der Sar, Fabian Barthez, who was the World Cup champion. Chilavert was first on that list, beat Fabian Barthez in voting by 52 points. So, overwhelming winner of that award. Let's put it this way.
Paluca at fifth place only had 50 points total. So that was the margin of victory. It just amazing, amazing career. And like I said to him, it's an absolute honor to be able to speak to him. And I completely enjoyed that. So let's move on, man. So we go from a superstar, a megastar, to someone that I'm actually considering a friend more so than as much as a colleague. You know, when you get to hang out and share beers with somebody, you start to put them on that level, right? And you and I mm-hmm. both have had the pleasure to do that. You know, he covers football for Gentleman Ultra. He covers it for Football Italia. You can hear him on Sirius XM multiple times. He's an Italian football expert, more so than you and I put together, I think, and a great friend of the show and a great friend of ours, Matt Santangelo. Joining us now on Low Limit Football from State of Play Podcast, These Football Times, Gentleman Ultra, Football Italia, and featured on Sirius XM Radio, Mr. Matt Santangelo. Matt, how are you tonight, man?
Doing pretty well, guys. Thanks for having me back on.
Thanks for coming on, man. We really appreciate you taking the time. I want to start out with the craziness that has been the first 2 weeks of the Serie A season. And more specifically, the Saturday 2:30 p.m. time slot that we played in. The first match of the season, Napoli-Fiorentina, 4-3 to Napoli, 7 goals in the first 70 minutes of play in that one. Rewind to what we saw yesterday, Juventus 4, Napoli 3, a stoppage time own goal by Kalidou Koulibaly, one of the top defenders in the world. We saw Matthijs de Ligt have a kind of a nightmare debut for Juventus. We saw Juve go up 3-0, only to concede 3 goals after the 60th minute. The next match that is going to be played in the Saturday 2:30 p.m. time slot is one that you'll know very, very well, the Derby della Madonnina, Inter-Milan. Are you afraid of a 4-3 result like we've had the past 2 weeks? And what side would your beloved Milan be on?
Well, I mean, this one's tough. I think, you know, in recent years, there have been some really thrilling Milan derbies, some late goals, and most of which have resulted in frustration, me being upset because obviously Milan, I believe, haven't even beat Inter since the last derby I was at, which was in, I think, 2016, the 3-0 win with Alex Bakayoko beating Inter. Well, of course, that was under Sinisa Mihalovic. Quick little shout out to him for everything he's dealing with. We saw him back on the bench these past couple weeks for Bologna. But I think that the Milan derby, I hope it's going to be very exciting, very action-packed, tension-filled. We all know it's going to have that draw there, but it's just one of those things where you want to see the Milan derby back to being what we know it can be as one of the biggest derbies in football. And, you know, when it's in that 2:30 slot on a Saturday, I don't necessarily mind it in the sense that football is a great sport for timing things on a weekend and, you know, fitting football in, and not to mention you have the access to your phones, your tablets, and all that stuff. So I don't have too much of a problem with it being that 2:30 slot, but with the way we saw the past couple weeks in that 2:30 slot on Saturday, of course, they've been thrillers, tons of goals, tons of action, drama, everything you could pretty much imagine from football. So maybe they're going to stick with the theme there, who knows, but regardless, I think it's going to be quite the affair, and hopefully, as a Milan fan, that it leads for a Milan victory.
So looking into, I guess, more on a European standpoint, I do want to talk about the Champions League draw, Matt. And looking at it real quick, of the Italian teams that are all in different groups, you kind of have to favor all of them. Because, yes, with the exception of probably Group F with Barcelona, Borussia Dortmund, and Inter, you know, that being the group of death, you look at Napoli in with Liverpool, Red Bull, Salzburg, and Genk. You look at Juventus, Atletico Madrid, Bayer Leverkusen, and Lokomotiv Moscow. And you even look at Manchester City, Shakhtar Donetsk, Dynamo Zagreb, and Atalanta being in that group, which is kind of interesting how you probably need to favor Atalanta as the team that might go out into the round of 16. I mean, what's your take on the entire draw that all these teams had? You know, who's the one that's more favored? Who's the one that, you know, got a bit unlucky as well? I mean, what's your take on the four Italian teams heading into the Champions League this season?
One of the first things I noticed was the fact that we're going to get Liverpool-Napoli again in the group stages for two matches. We obviously saw how those matches went last year. Some really great defensive efforts, defending clashes, if you will, between Koulibaly and Virgil van Dijk. Of course, two of the best in their respective positions in football today. So I think that's one of the biggest takeaways that I saw, is that we're going to get Liverpool-Napoli again. Of course, if you look at their group, Napoli, yes, they got Liverpool, the reigning UEFA Champions League winners. But at the same time, they don't have PSG in it this year. And I think if you look at that group, they have to be favored to at least finish it in one of those two spots and get into the round of 16, which they failed to do last year, despite a really, really encouraging group. I think it was just they had too much power in there. It was a really difficult group for them to get out of. And obviously, as you know, things bounce certain ways and one thing led to another and they were out of the group. So that's really them. I looked at Juventus. Of course, we're getting a rematch of that Juventus-Atletico two-legged clash. That was a thrill last year. Ronaldo with the hat trick that saw Juventus go past Diego Simeone's Atletico Madrid and really keep Juventus's title hopes alive. That's also really exciting. They should be favored to win that group. Of course, as you mentioned, Leverkusen, a nice team. I'm not going to take anything away from them. And we obviously see how certain German clubs can't perform in this tournament. But it really looked, though, these two groups so far for the Serie A's top two clubs, that, or at least the clubs that people expect to be 1-2, you got to like their chances of having two Italian teams out of those groups move on to the round of 16. But then you have Inter, and that's a really dicey one. I think for me, obviously Barcelona, Dortmund, they're both strong. They both have been in this tournament for many years consecutively. This is Inter's second year back, but there are maybe some perhaps some question marks surrounding Conte and his ability to navigate, you know, these waters in the Champions League. He had his struggles at Juventus. Maybe that squad wasn't as equipped to win and go deep in the tournament, maybe like this Inter can be. Time will tell. We'll have to see how the Inter kind of shape up in that first match, whoever they play. And then you got Atalanta, which I think they're the more fascinating one, because if you look at the group, you got to like, yeah, obviously City are the favorites. I think most people would say that they're their favorite to win that group. But then it's a toss-up, right? Shakhtar, obviously, the Lautaro Fonseca to Roma. Dynamo Zagreb, a team that does have that capability of playing good at their home turf. But Atalanta, a team with making its first UEFA Champions League appearance. And they're going to be playing in the San Siro, which is going to be pretty kind of strange to watch from optics. But nevertheless, I think looking at all four Italian clubs in the Champions League group stages, I think you got to like the chances to have at least two, maybe three. And if all things work out and the stars align, have four teams in the round of 16. If, you know, all those teams tend to show up. I mean, I think that's kind of asking quite a bit for a team like Atalanta specifically. But if you're able to get three clubs going to the round of 16, I think that really is a good look for Serie A. It's just, I'm hoping that Milan could be here at some point soon, but you'll have to wait and see, I guess, until next year.
Well,
at the earliest.
Well, you know, obviously Milan took the punishment of being out of the Europa League this particular season, you know, as kind of fell on their own sword, so moving forward. What were your thoughts of that decision? Obviously, we would be looking at them right now. My next question would be, what do you think of Milan's chances in the Europa League, given what they did this transfer window? But I know we're not there. So what are your thoughts or your reaction to Milan, like we said, falling on their sword, taking this one-year ban now, as opposed to going through all the rigmarole and possibly being banned even longer than that?
For me, I think it was one of those things, too, where I looked at the Europa League and I felt that, you know, there were times, even like, you know, the year prior, where they had that, you know, they bowed down the round of 16 to Arsenal. And I looked at Milan's roster and I looked at their current situation as a whole. And I was looking at myself, I'm like, they don't really have the strength to compete on three fronts. And when you're in a Europa League tournament, it gets very tricky to navigate and to circumvent throughout the season, right? Because you have, obviously, these kind of obscure travel arrangements, these destinations you got to travel with, and then that quick turnaround time on the weekend to play a game against, you know, a Udinese away, or like a trap game against a difficult opponent on paper, but an opponent who, if you're not careful, can humble you just for the simple fact is, again, you're trying to make that quick recovery from Europa League travels. For me, looking at it, I was okay with the fact that they were able to make those sort of arrangements versus reach a settlement, shall I say, on not playing in the Europa League this year. I think you look at some of the clubs who have won it in recent years, like Atletico Madrid, and even some of the clubs like making deep runs, the Sevillas of the world. You just think that those teams are a little bit more equipped to even win the tournament. If you're Milan and you look at their roster, do you think that even if they did stay in the Europa League, would they have the opportunity to win it? I'm not too sure with a new coach, a new system that's trying to be integrated. I just think right now for what Milan need financially and with their objectives in mind, I was okay with the fact of saying, look, let's take a year back. Let's settle everything financially. Let's kind of make sure we're on good terms with UEFA in that regard, but also really put all of our attention and focus on getting into the top four of the Serie A table and getting back in the Champions League, which has really been the primary goal since they've been out of that tournament. So I was okay with it. I'd rather see Milan put all their eggs in one basket in Serie A and ultimately hit that objective rather than, you know, kind of trying to reach for maybe Europa League title, which, let's face it, it's very long, it's grueling, there's a lot of travel arrangements. You see what Manchester United is going to have to probably deal with. So I was okay with it as a Milan fan for them to kind of just sit this one out and play spectator.
Sounds good. Matt, again, people can find you State of Play Podcast, These Football Times, Gentlemen Ultra, Football Italia. You can catch you on SiriusXM Radio as well. Thank you for coming on the show and joining us tonight. We really appreciate it and always look forward to having you on. And looking forward to getting together real soon, man.
Absolutely. I'm ready to go hit New York and grab a couple of drinks and watch some football. So thanks a lot, guys, for having me on.
Thanks, man. Have a good night. Matt Santangelo. Always great to catch up with him, Rob. Your reaction to some of the stuff, you know, the one that's intriguing to me is the Atalanta thing where they're playing at the San Siro for the Champions League.
Yeah, but I think when you think about it, because you look at the stadium that they have over there in Bergamo, yeah, that's where they play, Bergamo.
Yep.
You know, it only holds 21,000. So, and looking at Bergamo's in Lombardy, which is, you know, about, I think, 25 miles from Milan. I don't know, my geography of Italy is not as good, but, you know, it makes sense because it's the closest stadium there.
Right.
And, you know, in order to get revenue and to bring fans, even though it probably won't be as high as expected, you know, maybe there are a lot of Atalanta fans that do want to see their team in the Champions League, and maybe that the stadium that they have over there in Bergamo won't fit enough.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense in a way.
And you also keep in mind mass transit in Italy is so good that that these fans will definitely be able to make the trip. And I'm also happy with the fact that Atalanta didn't have the fire sale that, like, we saw in Lille, where, you know, their big pieces like Duvan Zapata, you know, there's Papu Gomez, you know, to name others. They didn't sell off a lot of their pieces. In fact, they strengthened. So yep. It really makes me excited, and one of the reasons why I think they might even come out of that group with Manchester City in the end of it all. So let's move on. Our next guest on the show is someone, you know, of SiriusXM fame as well as ESPN. Somebody that, you know, one time, Rob, I remember driving around because I listen to SiriusXM a lot, and he was on the radio talking about, you know, and I forget, it was like a pivot where he was talking about the Premier League, and then all of a sudden we're back talking about like Ligue 1 or something. And he was so knowledgeable in both spots on the interview that I was like, wow, either he's watching way too much soccer like me, or the guy just really knows this stuff. And I'm sure it's the second, but he's certainly, you know, a great friend of the show. We hadn't had him on in a while. I remember when I think it was when Jurgen Klinsmann was fired. He was the one that we reached out to at the drop of a hat, and all of a sudden he was like, yeah, I'll come on right now. And we had like this surprise guest. So he's, you know, been great for us, and I'm glad we got to have him on the show. So without further ado, SiriusXM FC's and ESPN's Janusz Michalik. Joining us now on Low Limit Football from ESPN and SiriusXM FC, Janusz Michalik. Janusz, welcome back to the show. How are you today?
I am doing well. How are you guys? It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been. We're glad we can get together today. We just got done watching the North London Derby between Arsenal and Tottenham, a 2-2 draw, and a very exciting one. You know, Rob and I were commenting to each other offline here that Arsenal, I mean, look wonderful in attack. They really move forward well. Mm-hmm. Nicolas Pepe has been fantastic. But man, they cannot defend to save their lives. I mean, what are your thoughts on the match? Because for me, I thought Arsenal was the better team moving forward, but definitely the score doesn't show that.
Well, I mean, I think we're not breaking any news here, right? I mean, if Arsenal can play on the front foot, they are wonderful to watch, aren't they? I mean, they started the game extremely well. The goals were, you know, in a way against the run of play, you have to say. I mean, the first one over the top, I mean, you look at the situation, and you know, I think on Twitter I said it right after the first goal because it was so direct. Socrates was out of position. David Luiz was run around, you know, I can't remember who got rid of him like a cheap suit there. But and then Leno coughs it up. But it's true, right? When you think about it, all the complaints we may have about Arsenal, it's never what they do going forward. It's never to do with how wonderful they can be and entertaining they can be. But if you're going to play that way, then you've got to have that balance. And for years, it's the same story, right? So when I saw David Luiz coming over, you say to yourself, really? Seriously? I mean, we've seen him everywhere. I mean, the one thing that he doesn't like to do is defend.
Right.
And we've seen that already this season. And if your spine is going to be Socrates, that lacks composure, right? We've seen it with yellow cards, with red cards. Even in this particular game towards the end, he almost got into something that he shouldn't have, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's a problem. Shaka is another one lacking composure. So I don't think there are any surprises. But I will give you this. Again, North London Derby delivers again. It was absolutely fascinating to watch. I thought the tempo was incredible. And in fact, I think the Arsenal came back into the game, not only because that wonderful goal from Lacazette just before halftime, right, which gave him life, but I think they controlled the tempo in the second half. They were architects of their own demise, I think, because I think the game was almost too quick in the first half. It was played in transition, and I don't know if you guys want to get into tactics of it, because Emery, once again, you know, I mean, if you look at that midfield from Arsenal, do you really say to yourself, This is what's going to do the job for the most part. So some question marks about Unai Emery, which, by the way, I've had, you know, for a long time.
You know, Jonas, I mean, looking into what we saw today and also in other results over the weekend in the Premier League, you know, we saw Manchester United drop points. We saw Chelsea drop points. You know, we saw, and then essentially to the gain of Liverpool and Manchester City, who both won over the weekend. Do we think that even though it is starting very early, you know, we're only four games into a 38-game season, are we starting to see that kind of big gap that these two teams have with the rest of the league?
Yes. I think we could have seen that last season as well, right? I mean, the amounts of money spent, I mean, you can say Liverpool didn't spend anything this summer, really, for the most part, but they've done some damage last season. And yeah, I mean, the quality from Manchester City, I think we've known that for a while, right? I mean, it doesn't take a year or two. I mean, Pep Guardiola, the sort of players that he's gotten. So we knew that for sure. And I think a smart buys from Liverpool, of course, and Alisson and Van Dijk told you where Liverpool were going, because the front three were wonderful, right? The balance that, you know, we've talked about Arsenal is there. I mean, Arsenal, to some degree, were, I don't want to say same as Arsenal, but there are big question marks defensively for years. Going forward, there wasn't that much of an issue, but they fixed that very, very quickly. And on top of it now for Liverpool is that midfield is taking shape wonderfully. So, yes, I mean, it's very, very early, but, yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, who can join them? We see issues with Spurs and Arsenal. That was on display, right? I mean, they can play wonderful football, but to be consistent over the course of the entire season and play the way, for example, Liverpool against Burnley, right? I mean, against this tough team. And I think winning that Champions League last season was huge, right? Because the narrative of not winning goes away. The narrative of Jurgen Klopp losing in the finals goes away. Losing the league, I mean, they were very disappointed, boys, right? But when you lose it like that, it doesn't feel as bad as losing normally does. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. 97 points, you point away, and you say to yourself, my goodness. I think it would have been more painful if they didn't win the Champions League. But they had to look at that season saying, yeah, we still have a chip on our shoulder. Next season, there's that extra motivation, right? And so it's difficult to motivate teams like Liverpool. But because they came so close and because Liverpool hasn't won in such a long time, I think that motivation still exists.
For sure. Looking into the Champions League, as you just mentioned, you know, we did have the draw for the group stage and really a lot of interesting groups that we have on display here. You know, we look at probably Group D with Juventus, Atletico Madrid, Bayer Leverkusen and Lokomotiv Moscow. You know, we look at groups with Liverpool and Napoli. We have Spurs and Bayern Munich, PSG, Real Madrid. And I think, and for all intents and purposes, Joe and I could agree that we have our group of death in Barcelona, Borussia Dortmund, Inter Milan, and Slavia Prague. I mean, Jonas, what's your reaction onto the Champions League draw that we have the other day? And, you know, what stands out to you and into what we're going to see in the next couple of weeks?
I think it's very interesting. People were complaining because, you know, you have, you know, the Atletis with Juventus once again, Manchester City, I think, with Shakhtar. What is it, like three straight years? now. But let's face it. I mean, the big clubs are always going to be there. We're going to see that. I mean, you can't help it, right? People are saying, well, how come we have this matchup again, you know, again and again and again? Well, the massive clubs will always be there, and that's going to happen. But I don't think it was a necessarily bad draw. I see a lot of positive, a lot of interesting groups. Yeah, I mean, obviously Group F, as you mentioned, I mean, three out of the four teams are winners of this competition, right? And Barcelona, Dortmund, and Inter Milan. So, I mean, that's massive. Juventus, of course, the holy grail that is Champions League. So Atleti, even though it looked like Atleti were going to be maybe in the rebuilding mode, right? I mean, here's the team that lost their entire back four, right? I mean, who was there? Godin, Hernandez. I mean, Godin's such a leader. Felipe Luis and Juan Fran. But look at how they filled in, right? And João Felix right now, the youngster's on fire. And although at the moment as we speak, I think I just saw they were losing at home to Eibar. But, you know, I mean, they're going to always be difficult. They know how to navigate the Champions League. They have that sort of experience. Bayern Munich against Spurs, I don't believe that those two have ever met in the Champions League or European Cup. Olympiacos, you know what they say about Olympiacos. Olympiacos and Rub and Red Star, those are difficult places to go to, right? They're bound to take a point or two or three away from some. So that's always going to be... If not, you know, they're not going to go out of the group, most likely, but we're going to enjoy the beautiful, you know, Maracana in Belgrade and you know, and the stadium, you know, the support in Greece. So what else? Liverpool and Napoli, we've seen that before, but those are two of the maybe most exciting games in that group last year, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, well, PSG were there as well. So now Salzburg, Jesse Marsh, of course, an American in that. So that's going to be special for them. But, you know, I'm looking at that group, for example, Zenit, Benfica, Olympique Lyonnais, and Leipzig. That's pretty wide open, isn't it? I mean, I'm going to enjoy that group because you never know what you're going to get. I think you're going to get some quality football for sure. And I think we're going to be on the edge of our seats until the, you know, match day six maybe. And by the way, Chelsea, Ajax, and Valencia, and Lille, what's wrong with that group? You know, because I've heard a lot of people complaining about some of it. And yeah, of course, some groups are easier per se to, you know, to come out of than others. But, you know, I'm not one of those guys that I have to see all the big clubs in the latter stages, right? I mean, it's luck of the draw, I suppose.
Well, you know, you bring up a point. You know, everyone was refreshed by Ajax and what they did last year as one of those, quote unquote, not big clubs. I mean, Ajax is a big club, but it's not the Real Madrid, Barcelona, Juventus type thing. So I think that was refreshing to see. Also, you know, going back to Group H and what you mentioned about Chelsea, Ajax, Valencia, and Lille, my only regret in that group is the fact that Lille had such a fire sale in the summer window that, you know, if they would have kept some of those pieces, like the aforementioned Nicolas Pepe, I think, we would have looked at that group and Group G and Group H and gone, wow, these are two of the most even groups we've ever seen.
Absolutely. I think, you know, as excited as I am, yes. I mean, you look at the draw and you tend to always think of what happened season before,
right.
and you're quite right, because even Ajax in the qualifiers did not look as good, right? De Ligt and Frankie de Jong are key players for them. For them to replicate what they've done, it's so difficult. You almost have to have a perfect start, right? You have to have that, you know, what I call avalanche of momentum, right? I mean, if Ajax loses the first game, I think that's it. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, and it's not as simple as that, but it just, it's hard to see Ajax doing the same thing as they've done. Although, you know, it's not impossible because that group, even with those two players gone, it's one where Ajax will see themselves as maybe, you know, one of the favorites to come out of, I suppose. But quite right. Yeah, I mean, we're often mesmerized by the names of the clubs, forgetting that a transfer window has just taken place.
Right. And the biggest one, you know, comparatively to the two windows, it's certainly the bigger of the two. So, but certainly interesting to see what happens that first week in October, how these teams do match up and how we, you know, progress through the Champions League. Janusz, I want to thank you for joining us on the show today. We had an incredible time and always look forward to speaking with you and listening to you on the radio whenever you're on.
Well, thank you very much, guys. I appreciate it. And congratulations to you guys because it's, what, 6 years now?
6 years, yeah.
So many congratulations. And, of course, I wish you many, many more years.
Thank you very much. Janusz Michalek from ESPN FC and SiriusXM. Rob, you know, just to go back on some of the stuff that he said, you know, in terms of the groups, he's always the optimist in terms of the groups. What are your thoughts on some of the comments that he made about the groups in the Champions League?
Yeah, I think when you look at some of the groups that we have here, you know, they are very open. And like you said, the Group G with Lyon, Benfica, Zenit, and Leipzig, I think is one to watch out for. But I think I think the thing that he's trying to get at with is kind of maybe the unpredictability. You know, we saw in a lot of these Champions League groups of how like teams tend to be the kind of the outsider. Whereas, you know, I think the biggest example I think we can give is Ajax. If you remember, they were in that group with Benfica and Bayern Munich. Everyone was starting to give the advantage more to Benfica and Bayern Munich, whereas Ajax went all the way to the semifinals. Right. You know, you look at Spurs in that group with Inter and Barcelona. People were giving that to more of Inter and Barcelona to qualify, and Spurs went all the way to the final. So, yeah, I think it's that kind of unpredictability that we get sometimes in the Champions League. And who's to say that maybe we get something similar this year? I'm curious to see that. Yes, it will happen. But the question is, which group will it be? I mean, you probably need to favor that G group. And maybe this won't be a big shock, so to say. But, you know, maybe you could see something in that Chelsea group. You know, Ajax, Valencia, Lille, all three teams that are capable of getting those top spots.
Yeah, you know, and he mentioned, you know, a good point about team stealing points. You know, he mentioned Olympiacos. I want to add Galatasaray to that list of teams that are tough to go play at. You know what I mean? Tough away matches where some of these big clubs could very well, very easily drop points because they're such tough places to play. I think he brings up a great point there. And it gives you the unpredictability, which leads into you know, the David versus Goliath and where David does have a chance in this one. So going to be interesting to see. Let's get on to our last interview. And we saved our best for last in terms of our great friends. This is a person who we have on every year. It's not an anniversary show without him. He's been there for us really since day one and a great friend of yours and mine and the show's. So, you know, we always enjoy talking to him, and it's almost like a Christmas present, Jeremy St. Louis. Joining us now on Low Limit Football, our very best friend, Mr. Jeremy St. Louis. Jeremy, how have you been?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks for coming on the show and joining us every year, as always. I want to start out with a team that's obviously close to your heart, as everyone knows, Manchester United. In the news recently, we've seen a couple of big names kind of roundabout way. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, obviously thinking that he's better than what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has done so far. What are your thoughts, or could you imagine Diego Maradona joining Manchester United as a coach?
Let me just put it to you this way. If Diego Maradona was to join Manchester United as a coach, I think I would turn in my fan card. No, I wouldn't do that. But I think that, I mean, Maradona is one of the greatest, if not the greatest player ever. But he has not done great things as a manager. I think we've all seen that. And it's been disastrous. And it's been sad at times to watch him. Such a great, you know, one of the greatest, one of the GOATs. To see him kind of, you know, descend into old age. It hasn't been pretty at times. And I think that if Manchester United was to go and say, hey, here's the keys to the shop, I think that that says more about the state of Manchester United than anything else.
I would definitely agree with that. I mean, if anything, it would be more comic relief and distraction, almost like a funny side of Jose Mourinho, right, where all the focus would be on Maradona and nothing on the team, right?
Yeah, and that's what we had with Mourinho, and we don't need that again. You know, we don't need that distraction. The thing that I think that endeared Solskjaer to a lot of the fans was the fact that he's just not a flashy guy. He just goes to work, he does his job, he gets the team ready as best as he can, and then he sends them out there to perform. It's not a circus, it's not a sideshow, it's not, you know, he's not going to give you meaty clips to use in the press or anything like that. He's just going to go about doing his job, which is essentially what he's supposed to do. And so I think that after the experience of Mourinho, with so much hope that he could turn United back into the winner that they were under Sir Alex Ferguson, and that didn't work and it was a circus, I just don't think that United want that again.
No doubt about it. Now, the other person that was linked in Zlatan Ibrahimovic is certainly a much more intriguing option. Obviously, with United sending Romelu Lukaku to Inter, they do have a position at striker. You know, a lot of people have talked about Anthony Martial not being that player that they want. So Zlatan coming back to United, especially given the success he's had so far at MLS, I think would definitely be much more intriguing, don't you think?
It would be intriguing, but I don't think it would be a success. Zlatan is a great athlete, again, a great player, one of the greats, but Manchester United, no, he's past it. It's not. He's not a player that can play at the level that Manchester United need him to play at. He's not a player that they can rely on. As much as he likes to think that he could be, I just don't think that he's that type of player anymore. And again, I think that getting someone like Zlatan says more about the state of Manchester United than it does about Zlatan Ibrahimovic. That's not to say that he wouldn't be able to bang in a few here and there. Obviously, he would. He's still very talented. But for him, just stay in MLS, collect your checks, you know, light up the league, score fantastic, you know, ESPN top 10 goals every once in a while. And yeah, just remain a Ferrari among the Fiats, let's say.
So, Jeremy, I mean, looking into this season, you know, we have Solskjaer as kind of a permanent manager now. You look at a few key departures that were given during the summer in Alexis Sanchez, Romelu Lukaku, Ander Herrera, Antonio Valencia, and bringing in new players such as Daniel James and Wan-Bissaka and Harry Maguire, you know, mixing it with you know, put great players like Paul Pogba. You're looking at young talent coming in like Marcus Rashford, you know, even Mason Greenwood, who seems to be a sensation for Manchester United in the future. I mean, what are your expectations heading into this season? You know, they're in the Europa League. They're still contending for a domestic cup. But, you know, it's going to be very hard for them to try and go for that Champions League spot.
Yeah, the Champions League, I think, is the best that we could hope for. And I think in order for us to get into a Champions League position, it's going to be a combination of us capitalizing on opportunities and other teams not doing so. I think that for Manchester United, going deep into the Europa League is a must. I think that what they're doing to refresh the squad a little bit, I'm not necessarily upset with the players that have left. You know, it's kind of a do they want to be there type of situation. That's kind of the situation with Pogba as well. You know, we're still hearing that he could go even. They can't bring anybody in, but, I mean, they can still lose players. There's still some talk that he might end up at Real Madrid. But I just think at the end of the day, you want players that are going to be there. I like the fact that they're bringing in some young players. Daniel James has been fantastic. Harry Maguire, I'm not down with the money that they spent, but is he a guy who can change games? Is he a guy that can win you games? Yes. Is he a difference maker? Yes. So at the end of the day, one of the guys I work with, Tim Stannard, says don't look at the fee. Look at whether or not he can make your team better. If he makes your team better, then, you know, don't worry about the fee. And Maguire certainly does that. But I just think that this year for Manchester United, the Champions League spot is what we can hope for at best. And I'd be even surprised if we get there based on some of the things that I've seen already this season. And we're only, a few games in. So I think that it's going to be a long season again for United fans. There's going to be ups and downs. I think I'm not 100% sure that Solskjaer will last the whole season. I kind of hope that he will, but I think that there's an opportunity for him to not last the season because of the fact that there is such an, you know, there's such a level of impatience in modern football that if they struggle, I think that he could be a guy that we hear getting, you know, at least rumored to be sacked. So for Manchester United, I think it's just about trying to go as deep as you can into the Europa League, do the best that you can, win your home games, win the Ottawa game, and maybe just cross your fingers that we can get into a Champions League spot for next season.
Definitely. Now, looking into one of the players that, you know, you mentioned expensive fees for defenders, is one player that has really diminished that fact, and we saw that yesterday in Monaco when the Champions League draw happened, but also when Virgil van Dijk was named UEFA's Men's Player of the Year award, an award that, you know, had been dominated from the other two nominees for this award today, from Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo. But, you know, you look at now 2 years without both men, Messi and Ronaldo, not winning the main titles individually. And with the Ballon d'Or coming up as well, with the FIFA's best award coming up, you know, you kind of have to see that maybe there is that kind of domino effect of Messi and Ronaldo's strong force ending, as we saw, I think, here today, yesterday with Van Dijk's win. So, Jeremy, I mean, do you find that this was just that Van Dijk was the best player all across Europe last season. He did win the Champions League, but, you know, you look at individually how Messi, Ronaldo did as well. I mean, do you feel that Van Dijk's award was just yesterday?
I think it. I do believe it was because of the fact that he won the Champions League. If he didn't win the Champions League, then yes, there's going to be questions. But because of the fact that he backstopped a Liverpool team to the Champions League title, I think that he's a good choice for Player of the Year. I mean, this is a guy who's one of the best. You know, he's evolved into one of the best center backs in all of world football. And I don't think that the award is a poor reflection on that. Certainly, I think that he more than deserves that award, especially because of the fact that they won the Champions League. Messi and Ronaldo, as you said, there's a little bit of a, you know, it's kind of one of those things that we don't want to admit, right? It's one of those things that we don't want to admit, because by admitting that Messi and Ronaldo are it's getting past their time, we're admitting that we're getting older. So we don't want to admit that. We want to stay where we are. We want them to continue to be as brilliant as they have been, you know, over the last decade. But it's just not happening, and we're seeing that more and more. The fact that they're split in different leagues, you know, makes it a little bit less intriguing, because now they're not competing against each other. And even the two players themselves have admitted that the competition with each other made each other better. So I think that what we're seeing now is just, they're just starting to slow down. Ronaldo's still a specimen. He's still a great player. He's still got pace, but he's not the guy that he was, you know, 3-4 years ago. Messi, we're seeing the injuries start to come up. We're seeing the injuries start to pile up because the games are not lessening. They're playing just as many games, if not more, than they were, you know, a decade ago. So it makes sense that the injuries are going to start to pile up.
Now, Jeremy, before I let you go, I want to just jump in here because you've been so gracious with us over the last 6 years to come on the show every year for our anniversary show. And we always ask you kind of a be-in question or something like that. But I want to change the focus of our closing question for you this time around and ask you about, as an aspiring journalist or as an aspiring broadcaster, you know, something that Rob and I, now we've got 6 years of experience doing this, and you've got many, many more than us. If somebody's listening to this for the first time, interested in getting into some type of broadcasting or journalistic trade, you know, that we've kind of gravitated to, what's the one bit of advice you would give that person listening right now?
The one thing that I would say, I guess, and I've had some interns that have worked with us, and so I've for some reason I've been handing out advice a little bit more so in the last little while than in previous years, which I guess means that maybe I have to admit that I'm getting older. But the one thing that I would say is, one of our interns was talking about how much they love soccer, and she loves soccer, and she wants to be involved in soccer, and this is what she wants to do, and it's a dream to be at BN, and being able to intern with all these people who she's watched all these years, and I just love all these teams, I love soccer, and like this. But the one question I had is, do you love the craft? Like, loving the content is one thing, but loving the craft is something else. Because for me, I've done news, weather, sports, I've done television, radio, digital, I've written for the web, I've written for publication, I've written for television, and I've done pretty much all that there is. And for me, I love what I do in terms of the content. I it's fantastic. I get to do sports, soccer calls, football calls, basketball. Somebody that told me when I was starting out that my career would end up the way that it has, I would have absolutely been shocked. My jaw would have been on the floor, because I've had so many great opportunities to do so many great things. I've been so incredibly lucky. But the one thing that is the constant throughout my career is that I love the craft of journalism. I love the craft of presenting to people. When I sit down in the next, you know, half an hour to start writing the preview show that I'm going to be doing on my next shift, you know, the one thing I think about all the time is it worth it for the person that's watching? Am I making it worth it for them? Because money can't buy time. Time is one thing that you get that you just can't get back. So I want to make sure that when people watch me, listen to me, read me, that it's worth their time, that they're not going to walk away from that saying, oh, that was a waste of my time. I want it to be worth their time. And so for me, it's the craft of broadcasting, journalism, presenting, that is important to me. And that's the one thing that I would ask aspiring journalists is, yes, you can love everybody. Every guy who's in journalism wants to do sports. Of course they do. That's what they want to do. But do you want to do soccer? Would you do cricket? Would you do rugby? Would you do Formula One? Would you do MotoGP? Because you don't necessarily get to pick. So you have to love the craft. And for me, that's what I love. I love the craft. So to any young aspiring journalist that's out there, do you love the craft of doing it, or do you love the content? Because if you love the content, you're never going to love the craft. You have to love the craft, and the content is the added bonus to that. And then it's never works. It's always fun. I love sitting down and writing stuff for television. I get in trouble all the time at work because my leads are too long or they're too superfluous. And I'm like, look, but it's a good lead. It's worth it for the person that's going to be watching. They're going to like it. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the joy comes for me and the presenting. So I would say you have to love the craft, otherwise you're just not going to last very long.
It's a perspective actually that I've never thought about, and it's a great point that it's all the prep work, it's the back stuff, it's the preparation. You have to love that as well. It's one thing to love watching Messi on the pitch running around week in and week out, but to love preparing to describe that to people, because you do have a finite amount of time that you're allowed to capture them. And to pour that love into what you do, I think is definitely visible when we watch you week in and week out on BN. So thank you for being such a great friend to the show. We appreciate you and everything you do for us. And on behalf of on Rob and myself, we look forward to many, many more years of being together with you and getting to chat with you.
It's my pleasure, guys. I really appreciate the fact you reach out to me and do that. And as you know, anytime you need anything, you just reach out to me.
We appreciate it. Have a good night.
You too, guys.
All right. The great Jeremy St. Louis, great friend of the show, great friend of ours. And it's not an anniversary unless we have him. Rob, your thoughts on a lot of stuff you had to say, especially I'd like your thoughts on the aspiring journalist part. I thought he gave great insight to the fact that you have to love the craft, and the content is kind of the added bonus to the craft itself. What were your thoughts on some of his advice?
No, I think he hits it right on the head of the nail. I think if you have the ambition, if you have the passion to do something that you like, you also have to enjoy what it's all about. I mean, you could say you're a fan of Barcelona and you want to work for them and you want to be a presenter for them, but you got to have the craft and understand what's it all about. And I could probably relate that to myself. If hard to believe that coming into here when I was 16 and kind of worked my way up to accomplish what really has been a career for me in the last 5 years, and to be at the person that I am right now, it's been a blessing, I could say, and I could definitely take his advice into consideration.
No doubt about it. So as a departure from our normal show, we don't have any matches of the week to talk about this week. Obviously, we are going into the international break, so we do have European qualifiers for the European Cup going on this week. We have a bunch of friendlies going on as well. Definitely check your local listings for that. When we come back next week, we will probably start to look at some of those European qualifiers and start to look at the Champions League, because as we get back into the swing of things, we will be jumping right into Champions League, as well as the leagues finally getting into the full swing of it all after these tasty few games that we've had in the multiple leagues that we cover. So, Rob, the closing music.
Let's do it.
All right. So, for our six-year anniversary show, special thanks again to Jose Luis Chilavert, to Matt Santangelo, to Janusz Michalik, and to Jeremy St. Louis for making this a great anniversary show. We'll be back next week with a special guest and breaking down a lot of the international breaks. So for 6 years of sun, six years of fun, 6 years of preparation, and 6 years of enjoyment, for me, I am Joe Uccello.
And I am Rita Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.